Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian. And if you would like to support the show, please go to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. And our guest today is Gretchen Schreiber. She grew up between the hills of Kansas and the hospitals of Minnesota, but now calls the hills of Los Angeles home. After getting her MFA from USC's School of Cinematic Arts, she now works as a professional bookworm for Hello Sunshine, Reese Witherspoon's media company. And her debut novel, Ellie Haycock, Is Totally Normal, is out now, and she's always down to run away to Disneyland or a bookstore. Hello!
Hello. How
I
are
have
you?
started listening to your audiobook of Ellie Haycock, and I love it. Oh my gosh.
Natalie Nottis, genius.
She's so good.
She's so good.
I've only listened to maybe a quarter, maybe 30%, but there's one moment where you say like doctors don't have to like live with the consequences kind of what they
Of their
do and how they
actions,
talk to patients. And that's I heard that yesterday and I'm still thinking about that a lot. That was very, very well said.
It's a lot of like, doctors. I don't know. Medicine is a practice is always one of my favorite phrases in the book. Medicine is a practice, and my body is upon which it is done. You know, it's 3 books ago now, so I don't remember anything I
Yeah.
wrote.
I love it. I love it. I'm so excited to keep going. And I love having authors on this podcast to talk about the books that, started it all. So I guess we'll dive in. Our book today is Crown Duel by Sherwood Smith, which originally was two novels, republished as one. So they were originally published in 97 and 98, and then together in 2002. We were talking about this just before we started recording. Sherwood Smith is the author. I like to do a little research just on like who does this. And her website says, I don't like putting personal information online. I don't think the details of my life are relevant, but sometimes young readers have to do book reports. So fine.
When I found out one of my mutual author friends knew her, I think I like flipped a lid, and she was like, not like she knows so many more like more popular authors, and she was like, this is the person you're losing your shit over. And I was like, Cindy, you don't understand. This person like
Yeah.
defined so much of my high school life.
I had not heard of her name. And then I was doing research yesterday. I was like, actually, I have heard of her name because I'm a very big Wizard of Oz fan. And there are like 50 Oz books. And then in the early aughts, the L. Frank Baum Family Trust was like, Sherwood Smith, we put our stamp of approval on you. You can go write some Oz books. So you're like blessed by the family. And that's, I've heard of, I haven't read those, but one is called Sky Pirates Over Oz. So I'm like, well, that is all
Yeah.
my favorite words. So we have to find that out
Sounds
one
like
day.
everything we want.
She was a teacher for 20 years. She started making books out of taped paper towels when she was 5. And when she was 8, she started writing stories in this world that would become the world of these novels. And the series has over 20 books, or maybe at least 20 books. The last one came out 3 years ago. It is still going strong. How did it come into your life?
So I, surprised to no one, was a big reader and would wander the shelves of my library looking for fantasy novels that starred women, which in the early aughts you have to realize was not as common as it is now.
Yes.
And I distinctly remember like just looking at the shelf and like kneeling down and like pulling this book out of the shelf. And it was the second one. I don't even know if we had the first one. And I had never been the like, I'm gonna sword and fight girl. Like I'm not like other girls. I wanna be a boy. I'd never loved that trope. Like that was not the thing I wanted. And that like looked like in the cover of the book, it was like her in profile in this dress and with a fan. And I was like, this looks exactly like what I want. And I inhaled it. And like, I bought the compendium when it came out. Like, I have this book in so many options. I will never stop. And so, yeah, I just like, I read it and it became the thing that when I would come home from college, I would pick up again because it was like the book I left on my nightstand. So I would just pick it up like over Christmas and I would reread it. And I think one year I finally read book one to like sort of understand the setup of book two. But I was like, you just need to know they fought a revolution. It worked. sort of, and you ask, and that's where we have stopped. It's still a book that to this day I reread at least once, if not twice a year, just because it gives me all of those like feelings again. Like sometimes I don't understand when people are like, I just want to read this book again for the first time. And I'm like, my favorite books are books that make me feel like I'm reading it for the first time. And like I feel like when I reread it, I always find like some new thing that they're talking about that I didn't notice before. Or like there are so many moments where I'm just like, Mel, don't do it. No, it's so cringe. And you're just like, yeah, that's how I would handle that as a teenager as well. So like you do you, girl. You've got to go through it.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting. Firstly, you picked up the second book first because the little research I did, it was like before Harry Potter really broke big, we didn't think that like YA or like middle grade books could be this long. So she wrote it and was like, this is it. And they said, we got to do it in two parts. And I was not a fan of the first half. I loved the second half. So it makes sense that that was the book that got you in.
Like, I mean, and again, I've probably read Court Duel 100 times. I have read the first book once. I have read the scene where she throws a candlestick at him. I've read that from his perspective multiple times because I just think watching him realize that someone has like crossed him in such a way is the best realization that a person can have. So,
It's such a, and I really like how you said that like that's the one you revisit because the first book is about, I have a little summary just because I realize like I should have these in episodes. So the first book follows the adventures of young Countess Meliara Mel Astiar, actually, and I'm guessing at all these pronunciations, of Tlanth, TL,
doing good.
Thank you. I'll keep trying. But follows Mel as she and her group of forces rebel ab against King Galdran. And along the way, the mysterious Marquis of Shivraith, who's also Danric, there's a lot of names
A
for the same
lot of names
person,
that he goes by.
aids her, although she just trusts him. And then in the second book, with the king now dead, it focuses on her journey to court where she has to navigate intrigues and Shivraith's rise to power as king. So I think it's really interesting that the second one is the one you revisit because that is a book all about replaying events from the past and saying, oh, did I misinterpret that? Was there something that I didn't get there? And that half felt, I mean, it feels a little like reductive to say, but it's exactly what it is. Like, court does feel like high school. It is like getting there, and I don't know the rules, and everyone else does. It felt so applicable and relatable. And I like that, I mean, we'll come back to it, but it's fantasy with like, it's mostly just
In love.
historical fiction. Yeah, there's like a touch of magic here and there, and that's it. And I think that is probably a very good starting point for people who have some inbred ideas against fantasy.
And I think one thing I've been thinking about it, trying to prepare for this podcast of how to describe the relationship between Mel and Danric, is like it's essentially two people who know the same problem and approach it from two different perspectives. I was like, he is the one who's like, burn it down. I said, burn it. And he's like, I'm gonna be on the inside and I'm gonna change it from the inside. And it's basically these two opposing ideas actually having to come to the table and understand each other, which is like fascinating as somebody who like gravitates to stories not about war, but after like, how do you put everything back together? How do you like, you've salted the earth, now we have to live here. And I don't think we talk enough about like what happens after a conflict. We just talk about like the conflict is over and we won. And you're like, you just destroyed the entire country. How are you going on?
Yeah. And I love that. I love that. I think throughout, like obviously that's the big arc in the second book is how do we put things together again? But I think that like there's this overwhelming kind of thing of like, oh, my actions have consequences in ways that I haven't had to anticipate. And isn't that growing up? Yeah, because she grows up very isolated in this castle and sort of doesn't know anything and her family is out on the edges and she's barefoot all the time.
She's not used to well I think one of the most interesting, and I think why it had such an effect on me as a high schooler when you're like still sort of developing your own moral code, I think the biggest thing that I tried to take away from the book as a child was, I think Danrick at one point tells her, you have this ability to like look at someone exactly as they are. That like
Yeah.
I can't because of the way I've been brought up and the way like people around me have been brought up, but you see people just who they are. And I was like, that is the kind of person I want to be. I don't want to see like the trappings that you have or the titles or the accolades. Like, I just want to see you and judge you as a person, which I think is why like it became a foundational text for me because I was like,
Yeah.
that's not the person I want to be.
That's incredible.
16-year-old
Yeah.
Gretchen was like this.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that's what, media is for. And I think those are the really interesting moments that happen throughout the second book of her sort of being like status didn't have to come into her mind. And so there are great moments of like her not knowing all of the implications, something someone might say here or there, but also there are
Or
these
like
moments of
when she
like,
goes to visit like Flavik and she realizes halfway through, oh, he thinks we're gonna like sleep together. Oh no, how am I getting out of this? I'm like,
Exactly.
oh, that's not what I meant.
Absolutely. But there's also moments where she like goes back home and is like, oh, suddenly the class difference is really striking to
Yeah.
me. And I wasn't aware of it before, and now I am.
So no, it's like all of those things. I think that was like, oh, it was like one of those things that as a kid I was like, yeah. And it's still applicable when you grow up,
Yeah.
like all the how do I act, when, where, how, and
Yeah.
deal with the consequences of what I did. Oops.
Yeah. And I really like how complex the motivations and the machinations were on Sherwood Smith's part. Like, this is an intricate web, and
Oh.
it really,
Yeah, like you're
like,
like, if you're trying to like describe, like, here's the political setting, and she does it so
it's a lot. Yeah.
seamlessly of like you start with this letter that is from somebody who is like the old evil king's sister. And I was thinking, I was like, it's really interesting that they didn't punish her. But I'm like, it makes sense, of course, because of who like Danrick and his parents are, that they're not going to punish like a family member for the sins of their brother. But like if we find that you've been complicit, we will. And like, yeah, and it just all like goes from there. Like, what is the mom doing versus the son versus like, the machinations of who's going to be queen, which like sends Mel into a thing of like, I don't understand my feelings, but I understand my feelings.
Yeah, which is nice that there's a lot of like, I don't know, I think a lot about like how would I see like love and romance differently if I hadn't grown up with Beauty and the Beast and these things. And so she sort of grows up in this way of like, I don't actually know what love is supposed to look like. Like flirting is a thing that's so alien to her, not because she's an ugly duckling or something, but just because like it hasn't, she's been focused on other things. And I think
And she
that's
doesn't,
really fun.
and it feels like my impression, because again, I haven't read the first book a lot, is that she was very close to her dad, and probably underlying all of it is watching her dad react so violently to her mother's death. And so, like, probably somewhere in there is that, like, if you love someone, losing them is just as painful. And so, why would I want to, like, set myself up for, like, destruction?
But I'm also sure like that's what the texts are for, especially when you're young. And she does create such a like a not dense in a negative way, but lush and like physical world.
I love that the world felt so built out. Like you even hear like Nee when she's like talking about like we have to get you an entire wardrobe. Like you have one dress. We have to fix that. And she's like talking about like this is where fashion was like years ago, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever. And at the time I was wanting to be a costume designer. And so like the idea that somebody had thought out like an entire history of clothing and like how clothing changed and like what that meant and how all this stuff, I was like, it was so good. I was like, I want more fantasy that thinks about fashion and like fans, which becomes a whole thing in like a way that doesn't just feel like, well, that makes you girly and like we don't like that because I want a sword,
Yeah, there's even a moment when they're talking about dresses and things like that where Mel, our main character, says like, "Gosh, sitting all day and sewing, that sounds so boring." And her like sister-in-law, best friend sort of figure in the second book, says like, Well, I'm sure those women would say the same thing about you and your life. It's that great line from Little Women of like, just because it's different doesn't mean it's bad, which I loved.
No, and I think like you get to see so many different versions of that. Like you get to see like Nhi, her best friend. You get to see Nhi's other friend, Elinette, who's very different from both of them. Like you get to see Tamara, who is like her own personality.
It's very much like the mean girl in high school.
Very much the mean girl in high school, but also Mel is like, I don't want to play your game. So like, because like Tamara does something really mean to Mel, and like Mel is like, everyone's like, Mel, just like, just end her, just cut her off. Like everyone will follow you. And I was like, I don't really feel like being an asshole. So like, can we just like go back to where we were, please and thank you. Like,
Which is such, I think, when you're like in the trenches of high school, to probably to read someone basically being like, I'm opting out. Like, I see what you're doing and I don't want to do it. Revolutionary. Huge.
Like, oh. And then, like, to have Tamara sort of realize that and then be like, oh, also, by the way, I'm gonna do one last favor for you and be like, you're supposed to be doing this. You're supposed to be throwing this party for your brother. And she's
I like that all of the sort of the that we get to have fun with it as well. We get to have fun with the court and do the dancing and also see what this means and that means. Like every I think that's the stressful thing for both the character and the reader is like everything at court has 10 meanings. And what am I gonna do? And just like trying to follow my heart, but also just like act like a person. And I'm gonna have all of these other things. That feels very true
sometimes
to
I think
adolescent.
what also is like very refreshing is that like Mel sometimes just asks for what she needs. Like when she first starts communicating with this mysterious person, he like sends her a ring and then he sends her like a flower and he sends her all these gifts and she finally is just like, I do not understand what these mean. You just need to tell me what you feel. And I was like, oh my God, you just ask people to be like, no, stop. I just need you to
I
like,
don't get it.
I don't get it. Please just tell me. Which I was like, oh, also realizing I feel like even through this conversation, all these things that were like, oh, that was really impactful for a teenage girl to hear.
I know in the 90s and the aughts, there was so much conversation about what a strong female character looks like. And that almost always was sword and anti-femininity. And for her, it is like, it is knowing your values and your moral code and to have complexity. And I think the wonderful, wonderful thing about this character that is in the second book that I don't think is in the first one is saying like, oh, I messed up and I did things wrong. And not only can I change those, but I need to change those. I think is fantastic.
Yeah, and sometimes you see it like all in real time. Like you see her like even at the very beginning of the book when Danric comes with her brother to her house and like they have that first conversation about an army. And she's like, "Oh shit, have I overstepped it? Do I look like I'm trying to like regain the throne?" And she like shuts up all of a sudden and he's like, "Well, we could still talk about this." So yeah, it was great.
We talked about this a little before logging on. I don't think I mentioned it on mic, but there's in the complete edition ebook that I have, there's these extra chapters at the end from Vydanric, the love interest's perspective, and they're prefaced by saying, I wrote these for the live journal community, which is fantastic, perfect. But I think what really stuck out to me in those final chapters where it's revisiting scenes that we had all because it's all in first person. Throughout the book, revisiting those scenes from his perspective. And what I loved, I think it was just like modeling a really nice relationship because everything he's like, how can I make this easier for her? How can I make this nicer for, like, how can I anticipate her needs and meet them? And it's not like these huge grand gestures. It's just like, she's gonna be stressed. How can I make her not stressed? It's so nice.
It's like his dad, I think, tells him something that's like really impactful of like, you have to remember that she sees you aligned with the old evil king. Even though you know you were not and you understand all of your actions that you have taken up until that point, she sees them as this. And so you
That's
actually have to
huge.
think about how do I combat that narrative and like be very clear with her about that. And like, maybe you can start again, maybe you can't, but that's what you're going to have to overcome.
I think it's nice that we don't have a lot of parental figures, because I think sometimes that can get clunky and like, here's the big message and things like that. But I think that is such a wonderful, that there are incredible moments of emotional intelligence and insight like those, where you're just like, oh my gosh, write that down for myself. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so the extra scenes are so good. I loved everything.
I have
Oh.
to say, I was so upset at the end of the first book, that battle scene. I think the first book has a lot of the sort of tropes that, and I did not read a lot of YA fantasy, but I think that she we're in the huge battle, everyone is here, she goes for the killing blow, and she gets knocked out unconscious, which happens so much in that first book. I also just read The Host by Stephenie Meyer. That episode is coming out tomorrow. And that has a lot of the same of like every scene ends with her being unconscious. Very frustrating. But she goes to kill him and then becomes unconscious. And then the next scene is like, we did it. Battle's over. The thing we worked for the whole book. It's done. No worries.
And she's like, and I think maybe that feeds into why she's so like, don't think of me as a hero, please. Like, I like everyone
Right.
has turned her into this like mythic hero. And she's like, guys, I was the smallest on the field. I was going to be the easiest to take down. And it actually didn't end well for me anyway. So, like, please stop telling me that I'm like the best
Right.
because I'm not.
Yeah. And it was interesting that the big climax in the second book also felt like it ended very shortly, but both of those sequences, the hill folk, which are kind of this like indigenous population outside of Mal's home base that have magic and they kind of come in and save the day. But I think that just like that was a huge question to me of like, how did you interpret that then and now? It seems like she's touching on like colonization themes, something like there's so much there.
There, I it was like really interesting because I could never tell because I think Mel would have a very different perspective of it of how like we might interpret it of like there's this thing called the Covenant. They have it's like an agreement between the Hill Folk and them that they will like protect them, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's really interesting the way Mel first tries to explain the Hill Folk to me is that like you understand them, they're almost more than us. So I don't know. I feel like it was always that weird moment. It felt like full circle. It didn't feel like when I was reading it as a teenager, it didn't feel like so much of a Deus ex machina because Mel had just done this huge thing trying to save them, right?
Right.
And so it felt like a little bit, and she'd always sort of been like, it's about the hill folk, it's about the covenant, it's about like duty, you know, duty over all this stuff. And so I didn't necessarily mind it as much. But it is always one of those things that I'm like, this is such a weird ending. And I don't know
Yeah.
necessarily how to feel about the hill folk. Like, to your point, is it colonization? Like, no, like
don't know.
they don't really like take over the land. Like they leave them there and the tree folk leave them the fire sticks. So it's almost like the best version of cohabitation.
It's very like reading about Sherwood Smith and about this world. I'll see things, and she's like, well, it starts with there are multiple planets, and people from Earth have come to this world on div and the, so and their bread, that's how coffee gets here. And I'm like, this is not in the book. What is this? I didn't have like a full-blown fantasy world drawn out, but I feel like that's everyone's sort of young person goal to like then be able to live in that world for the rest of your
Right.
life and publish 20 books. Yeah, but I don't know how this tracks into there's seven other planets and they're kids with special talents.
I mean, I will also say I never really went on. Like, I kind of was
That's a
very
huge question.
to sit day in Ramana and like with this moment. I think I read one time her daughter's story. So there was like a book of short stories put out by Firebird that is about Mel and Danric's middle child. They have a boy who's the oldest. They have this one girl, and then they have a younger girl. And Flavik comes back and stops being a tree.
Yeah, the antagonist at the end of the second book is turned into a tree, and that's how it's resolved.
He stops being a tree and he kind of like kidnaps her daughter. And there's maybe a hint at like, are they going to be romantically involved? Like, I read a lot of fan fiction when I was in high school for this series. And I just have to say, like, the idea, like, there was a lot of like, they get married. And I was like, I want to be at that. If that's true, I want to sit at that dinner table and just watch Mel and Dylan try to have a conversation and also be like, he tried to fuck your mother. Like, that's weird. It was very like Stephanie at that point, like Stephenie Meyer, like I think her had already come out. So like I had already been like, I got too much ick on that, like both the mom and the daughter, this is weird, gotta go.
Man, what was in the water in the aughts? Yeah.
Just like bad shit, I guess. But yeah, like it was like, so I don't know if like she intended it for it to be like a romance or not, but like the fandom community definitely took it as such. And I was like, oh, okay. And then apparently her youngest daughter goes and learns magic more than Mel even does.
Right.
So,
Yeah,
but
magic is a very sort of like tangential thing. There's so much that was in those last chapters that I really, those like extra live journal chapters that I wish had been in the book, because I think there's that incredible piece of that his dad says about like she still sees you as this former prince. I think that is in that extra chapters,
yeah, it,
which is
because
upsetting. There's like
it's all like Danner trying to figure out like I like her. Like my favorite scene to reread, I think, which is in that like excerpt before, is she throws a candlestick at his head and he like catches it and is like, she just threw a candle. Like he is like shocked that somebody would like attack him such that like a candlestick would be chucked at his head, which is fascinating. I wish somehow there had been, or even if like, because the whole like conceit of the book by the time you get to the end is that Mel is writing her own story that is going to be put in this little alcove in the library that like is where all the rulers' like journals go. And I'm like, it would almost be cool, Sherwood Smith, if you listen to this. This can be your like, I don't know, 30th, 50th anniversary edition of wherever like big anniversary comes next, is to like, how would he annotate that book? Like, what would his notes in the margins look like of like, that's what you were thinking. Here's where I was like, here's the footnote. This is what I was thinking. And I would like to explain myself.
Oh, that would be so fun. Yeah, it would be so fun even just to do like chapter
Or
from
yeah, or like
Mel's
a chapter,
perspective
like
and
a
then like
chapter, or like, here's what's going on. I would love to see, it's always talked about that he is like always working. Like this man is always got a bag of mail, and the mail is always very important. And his like,
Yes.
it's just like, it's like you cannot escape it, sir. And I just like, what are you plotting? Like, what are you doing, sir? Because you're clearly doing a lot of stuff.
That's a
But
good point.
so I think about that a lot. I think about like the other thing I think, which is really random, but maybe this is my fan fiction childhood. I think there's also a point, I think it is in one of the alternate, like the additional scenes, where you hear from his mother. And his mother is
Yes,
basically
that.
like, I feel really bad for not having like taken you out of this situation and raised you myself because your mother was my friend. And then I'm always like, what would have happened if that had happened? Like, what would have happened? Like, would you two have still
Yeah.
fallen in love? Would you have not, because you wouldn't be the person you are today if you had been brought up like Danric.
Exactly. It was like one line of dialogue in one of those extra chapters, and I was like, I need so much more about that.
But to your point, like, we can't bring the parents into this, right? Like, we can't.
Right.
Like, I mean, we can, like, they sit there sort of like as the, like, we are prince, we are like a princess and prince, and we are going to make sure you all behave while we establish a new government. We're
Right.
going to interfere.
He does have like the best parents ever. They're very like very reasonable, very well-meaning. They're down for a plot and a scheme.
I feel like you, sir, are the person who should be king because you are like with it.
Yes. I just like that throughout this book, it's like things are not as they seem, which is pretty basic. But like you know that in yourself, and then to see a book reflect it back is like, oh, it's not just me. This is a universal experience.
Yeah, or even like I
Yeah.
think for me, like the other big moment for me in high school, I was just thinking about this, was there's the whole moment where Nee and Bryn are gonna go on a ride, but they're like, we have to leave before Mel gets up because she like all these things, and you're like, and she overhears it, and she like you, we all have been there where our friends are going to hang out with the without us, and how do like this doesn't feel good, but I get it, but also, ooh, how do I handle this?
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many like navigating those relationships, and I was kicking my feet a lot because it was so cute. But there is like it's such stuff of like, well, my brother and his girlfriend want to go sit in the carriage and like canoodle, and I want that for them. But like also, I have a weird thing with my crush, and I don't want to hang out with him. But
I
if
don't really want to
it's
be
so.
him, but I don't know that I have a crush on him yet. But also,
I like that so much is just like I can't stop fighting with this man, and I don't want to, and I can't control. I love that there's this lack of self-control, which feels such a hallmark of adolescence, but it's also like a very conscious thing of like, I really want to be better. I don't want to be like this. And I
Yeah, it's
think
like
that is such a.
I want to, and then like it's like he says something and I open my mouth and all of a sudden like the whole thing when they first get to the palace and he's like trying to help her through her first ball and she like is like, what did you mean by talking about it like a war? Like, were you insinuating that that's all I'm good? Like, and it's just like he's like, I'm literally just trying to help you out here, lady.
Yeah. Throughout the second book, it's so strong that like the one of the main motivators for her is like trying to avoid humiliation. And the whole time I was like, God, that is 15 for
Yeah.
certain.
Like, shouldn't we all have like leaders of society just take us under their wings to make sure we have an okay time?
Yeah, it was so great to see such unrelatable circumstances of war and magic and all of this. And yet, like, my greatest thing is like, I just don't want people to laugh at me. That's how fantasy and things like that really succeed and stay with us, is when they are tapping into those most basic human elements.
Yeah, because like I feel it. I don't want to be laughed at. I care so much about this. Like, and I'd rather hide than try and face it.
There's a lot of like running away to hide and read a book, but I think there's this mix within, because I was reading The Host recently, and that's frustrating because we've got aliens and it's the apocalypse and there's people coming for us, but also I have a crush and he won't talk to me, and it feels very silly. But here, like, the worst of the war has passed and I'm having these feelings, and I'm also having these political feelings, and that those things can exist at the same time, and that she can also be like, this is dumb, we're dealing with like ascension and it's stupid that I'm dealing with this, and that is so nice. Yeah.
And yet I'm dealing with ascension, but also having feelings about that ascension, especially when he makes it about ascension and feelings, because he writes the letter that is like, well, they won't crown me until they won't crown a king until there's a queen, and she takes it the wrong way.
Yeah, there's this great sequence where he is writing anonymous letters to her. There's this great thing about like love has to start with friendship, which is so fantastic. And he has that advice from his dad of like, she sees you associated with this other thing, so you two have to get to know each other on an interpersonal level. Like you said, seeing each other as they are without all of the trappings. And I think that's such a great, like, it's tricky always, because I've had this in my own writing sometimes of like having a romance where things are withheld. And how do you have that relationship, come together while having that withholding, that sort of like that degrades trust a little bit, and how do you resolve that when they get together? And I think that's a really, really good way of like, for I couldn't tell you these things because of like actual political machinations, and also because like I knew you couldn't hear them, so I wanted to give them to you in a way that does not change the substance but changes the presentation. Like, I think that's the, she gets so frustrated by how well he knows her.
She also deals with that in terms of like when she employs her new spy. She's like, I don't want to go and accuse someone of something if I don't have proof, because then I'm just going to look like I hate you.
Yeah,
Like,
it's best intentions, definitely. Oof.
there's little babies, there's little idiots. My favorite one is when I realized when I was first reading it and he's writing a letter in like the alcove and she walks in and I was like, oh, he's writing to her. And she like asks a question and he just points with his pen and you're like, don't do it. Don't blow your cover, dude. My dude.
Oh, I don't think I'll read the rest of the series, but I do
Okay.
want to, I think, revisit that second book and see those things through his perspective. I think that's such a, I mean, what a great way to really get some fans, some really loyal fans, by having a book that rewards those multiple readings, definitely.
Yeah, no, it's always so good. Oh, like I said, 100 times. It's a fun romp every time.
What were some of those sort of biggest surprises and like changed perspectives this reading? What took you by surprise?
My gosh. Like I think I always pick up something new in the beginning, like something about her house. I think I noticed all of the things about her house and all of the ways that she tries to like fit in and like what that means for her versus like what it means for her brother. And he's always very surprised that she, I think Nee says it best of like, I think he literally thought you were like learning everything lockstep with him. So just like She gets it on some level because she completely redoes their house and like makes it pretty and like follows the trends for that, but does not think about like how does that apply to myself? Because I think she's so duty bound of like this is my duty, our family home, this is the duty to our people, this is like whatever, but like none of that same consideration applies to herself until it's like sort of fully pointed out. And that like I think Nee says something really like that is also really impactful to me at the end, where she's like, because Mel is kind of like a little bit bemoaning the changes in herself of like, I used to own one hat and it didn't matter. And now I have hats that cannot get wet and hats that aren't even hats. And just kind of sad about losing, that I don't know if I will ever be able to like walk in the rain without shoes on again and feel the same that I did. And Nia is kind of like, well, we're not rocks and we have to change. Kind of like, get over it, girl.
Yeah, I want to see
Like,
if
I
I
always
can
think
find
about
that
that. Like,
line.
what are we giving up to move on? And we can mourn those parts of ourselves, even as like we're changing for the better. It doesn't make those past selves any less good.
I love that. Oh, here it is. One doesn't
Yes.
lose a self like a pair of gloves or a pin. We learn and change, or we harden into stone. Which, by the way, what a bit of foreshadowing for the end when the villain turns everyone to stone. Didn't even
Oh,
catch that.
I didn't catch it. No, I didn't even look at that. But yeah, I think that's like always been one of those things of like, oh, right. Like the subtle changes of growing up, it doesn't mean that you can change and grow, and it doesn't mean that you were any less before. You're just different now.
And the difference, okay. Yeah.
So
And
anyway, yeah.
I think that like you shape yourself as you choose. Like I think that's something that like you have to change because you exist in the world and time moves on, but you can catch yourself and say, actually, I'm noticing these changes and I want them to be this way or that way. And I think that's so great. It was a very surprising read and I liked it. And I liked books that are, I don't know about books because I was not a huge reader, but I do like, people in the forest getting up to stuff, certainly. And they definitely do that.
Definitely, definitely do that.
Is there anything that you definitely wanted to talk about we
No,
haven't
I
done?
mean, there's always like the connection, and I draw this for everybody. There's a big connection between Mel and Danric and Feyre and Rhysand in the ACOTAR book.
Okay. Yes, I've only read like half of the first ACOTAR book. Please say more.
So the whole like idea, like when I first read ACOTAR, I was like, oh, that's the love interest. I don't know why we're hanging out with this dude. And it was because it's so like the relationship between Mel and Danric is that like they're two people fighting the same battle on opposite sides with different strategies. And you're like, oh yeah, you're gonna like he's not evil. He is on the inside fighting out, and she's on the outside fighting, and they're gonna be in the middle. It's gonna be great, guys. She sees him as a villain in the beginning and all through book one. I mean, you could also just pitch it as like an illiterate 19-year-old takes on the evilest person and in the end ends up falling for his right-hand man. Like, that's the essence of both books, you know?
Yeah, Mel has only been literate for like about a year or
Yeah,
two.
which is very much Feyre of like, I'm gonna like learn this thing and, in learning, trying to figure out that maybe the guy I thought was bad is not actually bad.
And that it's okay to be wrong.
It's okay to be
Yeah,
wrong.
is
It's okay to like
huge.
grow. And like, so yeah, like there's more than one podcast or like story person who's been like, there is a connection here. And I think there's even a line, there's a description of a room in Valaris that is almost part and parcel Mel's room in Romana. And I'm like, I don't know if that's an Easter egg or not, but like that's so similar. Like the view outside of the window is like a fountain with blue tiles and like the color scheme. Same. And I'm like, I know what this room is. I know what, like, I know what you've read.
I really like how much Smith took from, I don't remember which Louis, but Versailles and the Court of the Sun King, and that was where a lot of the fan language came from. The fan language was fascinating to me because of the specificity of a lot of
Trying to
the
like be like, what are these things that you're doing? Like, because I knew about
to
fan
be
language.
like
From like my childhood, there was like a place where you could do tea as a kid, and like they would teach you like fan language and hats, and it was like the best. Every girl in my year had a birthday there. It was great. And so like I was like, fan language, I love, tell me more. And like even still when I reread it, I'm like, what are you doing with this fan? How did you break a fan? Like, how is this happening?
Yeah, the specificity of like, well, then I put my fan in the only talking about literary pursuits pose. Like,
Or like
what does that look
I missed the fan sign, but that's changed the way of the conversation, and I don't understand where we are now. And I was like, what? Tell me more. But I love the
Absolutely.
idea that it's something that can sh like I thought it was a great way to talk about court and how like you can be duplicitous at this and we'll see me and like we're fine. Like we could be talking about the sun and we're not actually talking about the sun.
Yeah, you feel as overwhelmed as she feels.
There's so much.
I really enjoyed it. Would you say you have read a lot of like fantasy YA in this genre?
I've read a lot of fantasy. Why?
What do you think makes this world or series stick with you? What aspects of it do you think like make it stay with you this long?
I think so much of it is, I think now the sort of trend in YA fantasy is like, I am an 18-year-old in body and a 30-year-old in soul, right? Like I'm a 30-year-old, I'm basically making 30-year-old choices. And I think what really sticks with me about this book is that it feels like being a teenager again. And it feels like trying to figure those things out for the first time. And you cringe and you like are like, oh God, I know this is gonna end badly. Don't do it. Like you know. And it's still like a really good story, but they do feel like that like it captures that essence of being a teenager while still being like they are making really big decisions, country affecting decisions.
I adore that. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's rare that, maybe not rare, but I think it is less, happens less often than it should, where a YA book really honors where the reader is in that particular moment and says, let me, because I feel like so much of childhood is like waiting for the next thing and waiting for adulthood. And so it's so nice to have something say, like, I'm here with you right now and let's talk about right now. Fantastic.
And like really capturing that first step into adulthood of like in so
Yeah.
many ways, like taking accountability for your actions, falling in love, what does it mean to change drastically? It's for anybody, I know like your final question, I'm gonna like jump ahead is like, is it required
Go
reading?
for
I
it.
feel like this is 100% required reading.
Yeah.
They're like teenage girls. And you know what? Like throw the guys in there, you know, throw
Yeah.
them in there. I think 100%, it just it feels like a book that will meet you wherever you are, and like you will
Yeah.
identify with the humanity of the choices and being like, yep, would have made that, would have been that cringe. But it's like
Yeah.
it's so good. Like you're like, oh, because you are like me, I can actually see myself in this world, even if it's, you know, they don't even have chairs, they kneel on cushions. Like even it's so different from our world.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, yeah, I would 100% be that person. I would 100% make that choice, Mel. I'm sorry.
I love that you mentioned that detail because it's small, but it's in every scene that they don't have chairs and they kneel on the ground. Because the whole time I'm like, God, what are their knees like? This is an old man kneeling down on the ground. Well,
Well,
no,
even
because
with his
his dad
dad,
has a
he's
chair.
old. Yeah, he's a
Yeah.
chair. And they talk about because he had an injury that's like so weird that we now sit on chairs sometimes.
Bizarre. Yeah. It's mentioned once and they're like, yeah, his dad got an injury in the Pirate Wars. And I'm like, stop, I need that. Tell me more about the Pirate Wars.
Oh, you would also then this reminds me so in addition, you got the middle child who falls in love with Flavik, which is weird. You get her son who falls in love with a pirate, and he's escorting someone, he's escorting Russov's son somewhere. They're going to pick up a girl or whatever, and it's like she thinks that Russov's son is the prince and not Alec, and he's like, okay, cool, fine, whatever. Like, I don't want to be a prince right now. Thank you very much. Please don't look at
Yeah.
me. And he starts talking to the girl who runs the boat and is like, I kind of like you. And so it's this like back and forth of like, how does this happen? How can we do it? There's like this great ending moment where like, I think she talks to her grandmother or something because she's like, I like him, but like, do I want to go to court? Do all that shit? Like, I am
Yeah.
not even like I'm not I'm I'm a sailor. And he like gives her a magic coin and she like dives in after, because she like first of all like throws it off the boat at the end, and then like the very, very end she like dives in after it. And you're like, would read more.
What? Yeah.
That whole
Oh,
story.
yeah.
Also, just like talk about dad. What did you teach your son? That's the
Yeah. Well, it seems like it. Yeah, I can't in good conscience say the first book is
Oh
required reading.
no. First book is not.
But the
No,
second
it's
book,
cute. Yeah.
fantastic.
The
Yes.
second book,
Second
100%.
book,
What you need to know,
fantastic.
they catch you up. They catch you up
Yes,
along the
very
way.
much.
So like just ignore that book one exists. Just read book two.
But book one, you know, one of the greatest sins you can commit in writing is being repetitive. And the sheer number of times that Mal in that book says, "I'm such a little girl and these clothes are just too big." Once every 10 pages, she's like, "I'm just so small." It was, yeah, that was a little lot.
A
But
whole other.
But then I did, I mean, it came back for a cute little moment in those final chapters, those extra chapters where Vidanric is like, "God damn, she looks cute in that huge outfit," which is nice.
Like, I
As a
can't
very
look
small person, that was
that good in
nice.
that outfit. She's like
And
slim.
it looks so good. I can't see that woman's body, and it looks great. I respect that a lot.
Yeah. So yeah, book two required reading. Book one, give or take.
Yeah. Perfect. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
My second book comes out April 1st, April Fool's Day. It's called All the Stars Align, and it's about a girl who's all the women in her family find their true love at first sight, and then what happens when her best friend, who is not her true love, asks her to pick me, choose me, love me, and she has to decide: will fate choose her love or love choose her fate?
Oh, good pitch. Yeah.
Thank you. That was the publishing team coming up with that line, but I use it shamelessly.
That's what they're there for. Yeah.
Exactly.
I will stop the recording. Thank you so much, Gretchen. I loved this book and I really loved this episode. It really surprised me. And yeah, I just think this is a really good one. Good, yeah, good job, pats on backs. Okay, next week we are doing The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. And it's going to be very fun. Two guests. We all used to work together in college. It's going to be very fun. Madeline Douglas, who did Boxcar Children, is coming back. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. And I have some new projects coming up that I'll keep you posted on. You can find me everywhere at Erin Arbles. All right, goodbye. Thank you.